are all miracles and must make the most of our limited time here. Each of us have these unique gifts to contribute, and it's our job to develop these gifts and give them away. The preschool SLP is about working smarter to create real change in ourselves and in others. Being an SLP is a mission. Let's discuss topics that matter. What are the game-changing strategies? How can we treat the whole child? How can we create the shiniest versions of ourselves and of our clients? We're here at the drawing board for a reason. Together, let's create better. If you work with or have a child with autism who is learning to talk, this episode is for you. I made this episode for you because I am going to teach you an active ingredient tool that you want to add to your intervention toolbox today. And that tool is called ParentTease. So before I dive into ParentTease, I'm going to give you a little bit of a research review, and I'm going to tell you what I've found in my clinical experience. So first of all, a little research review, because there's some exciting research that just came out last week in Nature. And this is the Nature Human Behavior arm of Nature. And they studied in 77 brain scans of individuals that had developmental language disorder. And this is what's cool. What they found is 100%, all 577 participants had damage in an area of the basal ganglia known as the neostriatum. Stay with me here, because if you can imagine the children you've worked with developmental language disorder, when I tell you the areas of functioning this area of the brain is responsible for, you're going to say, check, behaviorally, I've seen that this is an area that they have issues in. Now, the neostriatum is responsible for, number one, movement. So we're talking about processing movement, planning movement, programming movement, executing movement. That is an area of the brain that this area that is abnormal is responsible for. Number two, processing emotion. Number three, processing language. Number four, processing speech. Number five, executive function. Number six, motivation to initiate a task or to inhibit inhibitory control to not be distracted. So these areas of the brain is what the neostriatum is responsible for. And this is the area that was abnormal in 100% of the 577 brain scans. This is some meta-analytic research. They did not pick out 577 individuals that had this injury. They looked at all the brain scans and they said, what do they have in common? So we know already from our behavioral research of people with developmental language disorders that these other issues that occur, that developmental language disorder does not occur in the mouth. It's multifaceted in nature. And for this, we need to take a multifaceted approach. Now, the neostriatum interacts with the cerebellum. Now, remember, the cerebellum is the powerhouse of the brain. That is the real CEO that is calling the shots to every area of the brain. It connects to 99% of the brain. So the cerebellum is very, very powerful, and it is constant communication with the basal ganglia. They found in these brain scans, 84% of the people with developmental language disorders also had abnormalities in the cerebellum. When you look at the cerebellum, it's very similar in what's it responsible for as the neostriatum. So we have two very similar areas of the brain. Now, what we want to do is we want to improve this processing of language and speech. So for these people with developmental language disorders, what we want to do is we want to help these children process language. So what we want to do is we want to break through all of that environmental background noise. So everything that they're processing, the environment, and we want the language and the speech to stand out. We want it to break through the ice of distraction. So that's called a signal to background noise ratio. We want the signal, and the signal is the speech and the language to just be like a spotlight in the midst of all of the distraction that they are processing. How are we going to do that? We know there's neurological abnormalities that are making this difficult, but we have control over the environmental input. We can impact the input and make the input stronger. So we're going to make speech and language stronger so the signal is stronger amidst all of the background noise. And how are we going to do that? We're going to use parent T. I'm going to first tell you what it is and what it isn't. And when I tell you what parent T is and isn't, then we're going to talk about how is it going to help these children with autism develop speech. Because as Noam Chomsky said, children cannot produce language unless they can process it. What the parent T's helps with is it helps the children process language by making the language stand out. We're putting the speech and language under a spotlight. Okay. I always think of this as the jazz hands approach. Like this is where we're really hamming up the language and we're pretending that the child that you're talking to is in row ZZ, the balcony nosebleed seats, and you do not have a microphone. You are using your body. You are using your face. You're using vocal expression. You're using expression of your facial expression, everything to convey your message to the person in the back row. Okay. So how are we going to do that is through parent T's. And parent T's is grammatically correct. So when you think about parent T's, I think you're automatically thinking, oh, baby talk, like goo, goo, ka, 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 ka. No, 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 no. We're using real words. It's not caveman speech. We're not saying dog go, dog blue, dog in, dog out. The research indicates that children benefit more from, and I'm talking about children, I mean the children with autism, they benefit more from grammatically correct sentences. So these are grammatically correct sentences and using real words. So when we're using these words, we want them to stand out, and we're going to do that by speaking more slowly. You can think about ready, set, go. And I write a chapter about ready, set, go. Is ready, set, no, perhaps. That's in my 32 Intervention Strategies with Autism book. So you can check that out. But I'm going to give this an example because everyone that works with autism knows the ready, set, go. So what's happening when we say ready, set, go? What you're doing there is you're elongating the vowels. Ready, set. And you're also, by elongating those vowels, what you're doing is you're drawing more attention to the words. You're making the words longer. And what the research indicates is when we listen to other people, we don't cue into their consonants as much as their vowels to understand what they're saying. So when I work with children with autism and their vowels are off, and many times they are off. And I work with children with childhood apraxia of speech as well. And their vowels are off because of diphthong difficulties with the motor coordination. It's very difficult to understand them. If their vowels are on, I totally understand what they're saying. They can tell me a story about an outside event. I understand because I can hear it from the vowels. And the research indicates that if your vowels are correct, if your vowels are accurate, it makes you much more intelligible and it matters a lot more than the consonants. So the vowels really carry the information when we're talking about conversational speech. So we cue into the vowels and we're making the vowels longer. We're making the vowels louder. We're drawing attention to the speech and language. We're putting a spotlight on the speech and language in this sea of sensory distraction. So if you're thinking about someone with attentional difficulties, with sensory processing difficulties, where they're just taking it all in all at once, we want to pop through that with our spotlight on speech and language. So the first thing we're doing is we're elongating the vowels longer, we're being louder, and we're being more exaggerated. So I'm more exaggerated in my facial expression. I'm more exaggerated in my body expression. This is parentese. This is the way that we are talking to put the spotlight on the speech and the language. Now, notice also I'm pausing. And when I pause, that gives the child a chance to take a turn. Ready, set, and then you pause. Yeah, you took a turn. I passed the baton to you and you said go, and then blah, blah, blah. The pause is another part of parentese in which you're inserting pause to give the child a turn in the interaction so it can be back and forth. Another way we can use the pause with parentese is after the child does say some jargon, da la la. Suppose they say, da la la. You'd say, what? And then you go and you interpret that. You saw the doggy. You saw a doggy. Where's the doggy? So you're taking that child's jargon and you're turning that into his turn. And your turn is you're imitating what he said and interpreting it back. And then you throw the ball back at them. Where's the doggy? And they go, da, da, da. So, and then you once again, you imitate it, interpret it. So it's this back and forth turn taking that's occurring through pausing, in which is like, I said my piece, throw the ball to you. What's your piece? And then whatever they give you, you go ahead and interpret it and you turn it into a communication turn by imitating what you interpret back to them and you respond to that. So you want to keep that ball going back and forth and keeping those, think about when you play the game of catch back and forth and you want to do it as much as possible, 100, and you're counting 101, 102, 103 until someone drops the ball. You don't want to drop the ball. You want to keep the ball going longer and longer and longer and longer. So that's another piece of the parent tease. So we talked about how we're going to do the spotlight. We're going to talk louder. We're going to talk longer with the vowels. It's easy to say the vowels because the vowels are continuant airflow sounds. We're exaggerating the facial expressions. We're going multimodal. We've got these huge cues because remember the child's row ZZ with our arms, with our emotions. Our emotions are much bigger than they would normally be because we know that processing emotion is also difficult. And that, my friends, is parentese. So we're also pausing to give them a turn. We're taking whatever they give us. So maybe it's like they look or they reach. It's not speech related. So before I gave you an example, if they do make some jargon, how you interpret that, but maybe they just reach and you respond to their reach. Oh, you want that. And you keep that ball going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And that's where you're inserting the pauses so that you can have balance in the interaction that goes back and forth. This is what parentese looks like. And I bet you you're probably thinking, does it work? Now, we do actually have research to show that it works. In 2013, PLUS One actually studied 44 dyads, children with autism and their father dyads. So that's a huge number in autism research. And what they found is that fathers that use this parentese technique that I just shared with you with their infants, they had infants that were more socially responsive. So going and taking those interactions and making them bigger and louder and more expressive and grander and pausing, that does result in more social responsive interactions from the infants. This is very important because the research indicates that with dyads between children with autism and their parents, they find that a lot of times the children with autism are not attending to the parents' speech and the parents' facial expressions. By making it bigger. It's making that signal stronger so that the child is able to process the speech and the language and the emotions. I want you to take that parentese and add it into your toolbox. And I'm going to tell you, with children I've worked with autism, everyone has a different love language. Some children I've worked with autism really learn language through their eyes. I can be doing all of the parentese in the world, which is great because we're going multimodal. But the secret sauce was that I provided the print with it. So by having the print, green grapes, it was like, that's my secret sauce. I learned how to talk by reading first, and that was my side door in order to develop speech. I have another student where I've done multimodal, and the print really did not seem to help. The student really doesn't pay attention to print. But what I would say accounted for this student learning to talk is actually 100% parentese. With this student, when anyone uses parentese, this student is not only imitating immediately the parentese, but then the student is using the parentese later at a contextually appropriate time in a gestalt manner, and then later on spontaneously. But I can account to, if I wrote a language sample of all of the gestalt phrases that this child uses appropriately in appropriate settings, I could go and say, I know where she learned each of these phrases. Now she's at a point where other people that don't know this child, they can't tell. They think that this child is just spontaneously producing these phrases because that's the way it works. It's just like the ABCs and the 1-2-3s. Gestalt language development, it has a fancy name, but it's really about learning through memorization first. And then after memorizing something, you use it in a generative and more spontaneous manner. But first, you got to memorize it before you're able to play with it. That is where we are today with parentese. It's going to help some students. It's going to be everything for other students. And that's what I'm going to tell you. I've worked with students where the parentese was the secret sauce and the wonderful dust that resulted in that child developing language. And this child could be a child that was developing language at 5 years of age for the very first time. And then years later is a totally fluent speaker. But the print and all of the other things weren't the avenue for them to learn language. The avenue for them to learn language is bring out the jazz hands. And you bring out the jazz hands and you do the over-the-top expressions and you do the slow, long, loud speech, then that's the ticket. So I want to make sure you add parentese to your toolbox, and it's going to be the secret sauce for some children you're going to work with. I also want you to think about using that parentese for children on your caseload that have developmental language disorder. And that's in consideration of these new findings of the anterior, which is largely responsible for processing language. We want to go ahead and make that language more salient. And parentese is a great way to do that. I want you to take all of this information, roll up your sleeves, and do what you do best. Make the world a better place, one child at a time. You are always going to be first.